Hello and rock and roll. You have landed on Renegade Files, your underground connection to paranormal tales, unsolved mysteries, and covert culture. I'm your host, Lex Gordon, from Parts Unknown, broadcasting a pirate radio signal from the Jungle Villa Outpost, deep in the uncharted tropics. This is Renegade Files, episode 60, The Fermi Paradox, The Case of the Missing Aliens. Our Milky Way galaxy is so large that it bends the mind to fathom it, and it is a mere speck among billions of other galaxies in a staggeringly large and complex universe. In such a vast landscape, there are, very likely, billions of stars with planets capable of supporting life. And yet, we don't see or hear billions of extraterrestrial civilizations flying around, neither when we look to the heavens casually, nor when we search exhaustively. In a famous conversation, astrophysicist Enrico Fermi asked a simple question: where is everybody? This question, combined with the enormous numbers of potentially habitable planets in the universe, is the basis for what we know as the Fermi Paradox. In this episode of Renegade Files, we delve into the theories and calculations that point to a cosmos teeming with life. We consider some of the valid, or at least logical, reasons for not encountering these probable civilizations. And finally, we address the elephant in the room. Is the Fermi Paradox now rendered obsolete in light of new and unexplained phenomena which seem to be piling up around every corner? This is a bit of a shorter episode, but a potent one. I'm not going to have a separate summary, but we're just going to unravel the science and then rant right through to the end. Like Sam says on Tinfoil Hat, nothing but bangers, bro. You know I love that show. So come with me now, and together we'll explore the Fermi Paradox, the case of the missing aliens. 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 Part 1. Hello, is there anybody out there? So staring up at the night sky conjures a stunning combination of both vastness and insignificance, and an appreciation for the staggering scales of planets, stars, solar systems, galaxies, and the universe as we know it. It boggles the mind. Anyone who even attempts to comprehend the distances and sizes involved in describing the cosmos quickly comes to the conclusion that if there is any such thing as life at all, and our planet is literally overrun with it, then there is no way that, given the vastness of the universe, that there are absolutely no others. So, in 1961, physicist Frank Drake developed a mathematical equation to estimate the number of intelligent civilizations within a bounded state. And in our case, that bounded state is the Milky Way galaxy. This is known as the Drake equation, where N equals the number of intelligent civilizations, R asterisk is the rate of formation of stars, so R star is the formation of stars, these that could potentially allow for the development of intelligent life on planets nearby. FP is the fraction of said stars that actually have planetary systems. NE is the number of planets in a solar system with an environment that could sustain life. FL is the fraction of those planets that do sustain life. FI is the fraction of life-sustaining planets on which there is intelligent life. FC is the fraction of intelligent civilizations that have survived long enough to develop communication technology, at least enough to send signals of their existence into space. And L is the length of time that these civilizations emit these signals before ceasing to exist, before running into some calamity. The commonly cited numbers for these variables simplify the equation to N equals 10 times 0.5 times 2 times 1 times 0.1 times 0.1 times L, which simplifies even further to N equals L divided by 10. You got all that? Okay, cool. So we as a civilization have been broadcasting into space since 1974. So, according to the Drake equation, there should be 10 intelligent civilizations similar to ours in the Milky Way galaxy. The Milky Way is 10 billion years old or so, and about 100,000 light-years across. So if you were traveling at 286,000 miles per second, it would take you 100,000 years to fly across our galaxy. It's freaking big. And yet, in the greater scheme of the universe, it is insignificantly small. A grain of sand. In fact, less so, for there are far more stars in the universe than every single grain of sand on Earth. So, in order to address the Drake equation across such vast distances and sizes, scientists use the Kardashev scale, which categorizes intelligent life forms into three categories: Type 1, Type 2, and Type 3 civilizations. Type 1 civilizations are able to use all the energy available on their home planet. We Earthlings are approaching this, and most scientists agree that we are currently at about 0.7 on the Kardashev scale, with us becoming a full Type 1 civilization in another 100 years. Type 2 civilizations can control and channel all the energy of their host star, and Type 3 civilizations have access to power equivalent to that of their host galaxy. If Nassim Haramein is right, and we can extract the energy latent in the vacuum state, then we would take a quantum leap into a Type 3 civilization, and all of our energy problems would vanish, but that's a subject for a future episode. But if you contemplate something like the Kardashev scale deeply, you undoubtedly arrive at the realization that, although it sounds quite fancy, the entire idea is full tilt arbitrary. Categorizing the sophistications of speculated alien civilizations based on how much energy they can extract from their environment is an example of what marketers call myopic and sociologists call projection. How could we ever know that they harvest and consume energy in any way close to what we do? Maybe they are pure energy life forms in the first place. Or maybe we have vastly misjudged the scale of things, and the most advanced alien civilizations are made up of beings whose average size is that of an ant. Or made up of beings who are 10,000 feet tall. Remember, all of this is relative. Because we can look deeper and deeper into a microscope to see ever smaller things, and also look further and further into the cosmos to see increasingly larger objects and distances, we get the feeling that we are at the center of all observable life. But this is an illusion of perspective. All living organisms are at the exact center of their perceivable universe. Ants look up and see a large world. They look down and see the tiniest situations, just like we do. In this regard, that is, imagining we are at the center of all that there is, we aren't special. It's just the way that comprehension works. So, in 1950, Italian-American physicist Enrico Fermi, and that's F-E-R-M-I, was having lunch with some other scientists, and they were discussing the possibilities of interstellar travel. Fermi wasn't convinced that they would see this anytime soon, and in the discussion about the size and complexity and potential for life that should be scattered across the universe, Fermi blurted out, "Then where is everybody?" The room fell silent. This was a question for which no one at the table had an answer, and arguably, no one does to this day. If there were civilizations scattered across the stars by the billions, why hadn't we heard from them? It is Fermi's famous question, along with the Drake equation, combined with the Kardashev scale, that forms what we now know as the Fermi paradox. If the Milky Way galaxy is 10 billion years old, which they say it is, and 100,000 light years across, and if aliens had spaceships that could travel at just 1% of the speed of light, then our galaxy would have already been fully colonized 1,000 times. So, why haven't we heard from any of them? Part 2. The explanations. When you start down the roads of trying to explain away a paradox that is, itself, a speculative physical theory, you get into some late-night, buzz-driven campfire territory real fast. But that doesn't stop scientists and deep thinkers alike from going down those roads, and these ideas can be some of the most fun things to discuss, and that's why we're here. One idea that some have suggested for the seemingly empty cosmos is called the Great Filter. Scientists who speculate of a great filter blocking communication with the theoretical billions of civilizations describe this filter as being either, speaking in evolutionary terms, behind us or ahead of us. If it is behind us, then the formation of intelligent life to a point of interstellar communication normally gets interrupted pretty quickly in the vast majority of cases, and we just happen to be one of the extremely rare civilizations to survive into this stage, and that's why we haven't heard from anyone. Conversely, if the Great Filter is ahead of us, then we're not receiving communication because advanced civilizations have hit the wall and ceased to exist, implying that we too will hit that wall eventually. This is the doomsday idea that any advanced civilization will kill itself with giant weapons, which to me has always been an oxymoron to call a civilization that would actually do this advanced. Once again, a myopic projection. And some of these ideas come from articles at the Encyclopedia Britannica, so I'm just giving credit where credit is due. Another theory is that most of the universe is actually inhabited by civilizations that are communicating, but that we're stuck way out in a far-flung backwater galaxy.
Well, if there's a bright center to the universe, you're on the planet that it's farthest from.
Another idea is that the far-advanced Type 3 civilizations simply don't care about communicating with inferior life like us. If we discovered a planet filled with life, but the most advanced animals there were something like chipmunks or fish, would we send them a recorded human speech? No. Would we even send them a recording of chipmunks chattering to let them know there were other chipmunks out there? Not even. Another idea, and this is something we touched on briefly in the last episode about the Dark Knight satellite, is the fact that some scientists think the lack of communication might be due to the existence of a predator species, or the knowledge of the existence of a predator species of which actually intelligent civilizations, so like not us, are afraid, and thus, they refrain from transmitting signals into space, so they don't reveal the location of themselves and their precious resources. This, to me, is one of the scariest ideas. Another possibility, and a good one as far as I'm concerned, is that there are others out there transmitting signals, and we're just listening wrong. I mean, they could be using any number of different technologies and methods of communicating that we have no clue about. If you didn't have a radio receiver, you would never know that there are hundreds of radio broadcasts being sent through the air all around you right now, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Go outside without a radio. Do you hear a radio station? Never. So it's fully possible that aliens are sending out messages all over the place that we just haven't tuned into. I can imagine this discovery happening by accident, like some marine biologists are working on a method for recording the echolocation communication signals of porpoises, something like that, and some rookie intern accidentally tunes the machine to receive a signal that's on a frequency 2,000 times lower than intended. And when they turn the thing on, they hear a repeating recorded message from Zaphod Beeblebrox, a construction project manager from the Delirium system, asking everyone on Earth to please vacate the planet prior to its full destruction in 2 weeks under eminent domain to make way for a new hyperspace expressway. Thank you for your time and attention, and we look forward to serving you on the new Delirium Transgalaxy Bullet Shuttle, which will operate on fully renewable green resources. Pink resources, whatever they call it, right? Part 3. Is the Fermi Paradox obsolete now? The Fermi Paradox and the math of the Drake equation and the Kardashev scale are pretty old ideas at this point. Ideas from the 50s and 60s. It could still be argued that we haven't had the aliens land on the White House lawn yet, so these equations and ideas are still valid debate topics, and we can still ask, as Fermi did, where is everybody? But we have moved into some uncharted territory lately. The tic-tac, go-fast, and gimbal UFO footage filmed by naval aviators between 2004 and 2015, and then widely available since 2017, thanks to a few FOIA requests and our old pal Luis Elizondo and his connections at the New York Times, and the official consensus around these military FLIR videos of unidentified flying objects is no one conclusively knows what they are. Deep dive into those events and more in Renegade Files episode number 6, Military UFO Footage and the Pentagon UFO Report. There's a link in the show notes, and if you want to be super cool, share that episode link with your UFO-loving friends. Thank you so much. So, without getting too far into it, we do have things flying around that the military filmed, and they say they don't know what they are. Doesn't mean they really don't know, but it is something. Another argument for the Fermi Paradox being irrelevant at this point is the Arecibo reply. The Arecibo message was a deep space radio transmission sent out in 1974 with the intention of reaching out to extraterrestrials and telling them a few things about us here on Earth. It was a radio transmission that created a coded message that, when decoded, would display a pixelated type picture of information, such as the fact that humans are carbon-based life forms. When received, the message could be arranged into a grid of 73 rows by 23 columns to form a pictograph that represents facts about mathematics, humans, and planet Earth. From top down, the 7-part message can show the numbers 1 to 10, atomic numbers of elements including hydrogen and oxygen, the formulas for DNA, a graphic of the DNA double helix structure, a figure of a human, an elementary figure, and the population of Earth at the time, also a graph of the solar system, and a graph of the telescope used to send the message. Scientists sent the message to a system of stars 25,000 light years away to demonstrate the power of the Arecibo radio telescope, which was the most powerful in the world at the time. Then, in 2001, A crop circle appeared, but it wasn't exactly a circle. It was a virtually identical pictograph of the same 73-row by 23-column grid, except that it portrayed beings that were silicon-based rather than carbon-based. And obviously some other things were different too, including a complex diagram for not a radio antenna like we had used, but whatever it was they had used to send this message via crop circle to us, and it was elaborate to say the least. Some skeptics said, why in the world would they press a crop circle next to the antenna? Why wouldn't they send back a radio transmission like we had sent to them? And some observant critics of those critics said, maybe because the aliens didn't want only a handful of scientists to be able to understand and see the message. But then sometime later, another crop circle appeared that was a detailed ideogram of that communication device. The little sketch of it appeared in the Arecibo reply crop circle, and then a little bit of time later, a more detailed version of it. And that crop circle took 2 nights to form in 2 separate but ultimately connected pieces that formed one of the most astonishing crop circle formations ever seen. And to call it a circle is a disservice, to say the least. We will do an entire episode on crop circles, and I'm thinking maybe a 2-part series. We'll get into it soon, so stay tuned for that. But this is the gist of the Arecibo reply. The funny thing is that many established news sources have told us that the Arecibo reply crop circle was a hoax. They fall back on the fact that they believe every crop circle is a hoax. Publications like The Independent. Their evidence for a hoax consists of, for example, in the Independent article, the writer saying, quote, when a response came back in 2001, it was a hoax. Period. That's it. So that's their evidence for that it's a hoax. They say it was a hoax. Look at a picture of the Arecibo reply crop circle and tell me how 2 old men drunk on Smittix made that with a board in the dark in 1 night. Then look at the astonishingly complicated communication device crop circle that was an elaboration of the pictograph reply device and ask yourself, how many people would that take to make in 2 nights without leaving a footprint and bending the wheat in such a way that the stalks are woven and the stems keep growing? I'm not going on much more of a rant. Crop circles are fascinating. We'll get into it, like I said. I'll put some pictures of all of those in the Dark Intel files on Patreon so the cool supporters there can see them. And you can too, for less money than a bartender's tip on a single round of drinks. And by doing so, you will help crowdfund this very show and help me devote the proper time to it so that I could give you the frequency of shows you deserve and keep this project ad-free for you, me, and all of our crazy friends. So just click the Patreon link in the show notes to patreon.com/renegadefiles. Try it totally free for an entire week. I'll see you in there, and rock on. So it's not only the Arecibo reply, but the genuine, shockingly elaborate crop circles in general that make the argument that Fermi asking, why haven't we heard from the extraterrestrials yet, is pretty much a moot point at this stage of the game. Then, we also have some heavy-hitter UFO events. Roswell. The Phoenix Lights. The Rendlesham Forest sightings. The Aerial School. The Varginha, Brazil alien encounters. We won't go into these event details here. We've done shows on all of those, except Roswell, and that too is on the way. The point is, it could be said that the idea that we have never been contacted by intelligent life from outside of our planet is, at this point, a passé notion. There is much evidence that we have been. We have dedicated government agencies tasked with figuring out anything they can about UFOs. Their job is to streamline the process and remove the stigma and organize it in some way, even though they shuffle the terms and definitions around a lot, but that's just the nature of big government. whatever they call a UFO today or tomorrow, our government has been officially and publicly, to some degree, trying to figure the phenomenon out for some time. From Project Blue Book through ATIP and into today's All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, or ARO, one could argue that there must be something there. Why else would we have divisions of the Office of Naval Intelligence and the Pentagon in general looking into it? Okay, there could be reasons, right? Not the least of which may be money. A new department, a cool new logo, a new head of staff, a new long list of project managers, a few thousand new jobs, all funded by tax dollars to pay people to look for pretty lights in the sky. I'm not saying that RO is merely that, but just because we build another layer of bureaucracy to search for UFOs doesn't necessarily mean that they're positive that UFOs are visiting us. But they very well may be. These are the tough questions. Questions men like Enrico Fermi dared to ask. Today, our public figures get to study the questions ahead of time. They get to tell the press which of those questions they can and cannot ask. And teams of Harvard communication grads write the answers for them. Then computer technicians make programs to display those answers on a screen so the person who's ostensibly in charge can read them on cue. Then we record this spectacle with a high-definition camera and broadcast it onto 140 million television sets that no one is watching. Why then would you or I believe a single word that such a machine generates when it comes to whether or not there is any intelligent life in the entirety of the universe? I happen to believe that there is. I think some of them know about us and may have been here many times. Why do I think that? Well, I have my theories. But I also believe something the late great Jim Mars said, which is that if the aliens wanted to destroy us or siphon away all our water, they would have done it already. Why would they wait for us to advance to a point where we could give them a fight? Come get what you want from the cavemen and be done with it. The question of whether we're alone in the universe or not is a perennial question that we may forever ask. It feels like we're getting close. It feels like we're about to all know it. We're about to learn it. Some unequivocal, undeniable evidence. That's what it's going to take at this point. A huge event, like the movie Arrival. That kind of thing, right? That's a great one. Check it out. Looking for the answers and looking in the sky and seeing something you can't explain, it's such a part of the fun of life. So many of us spend so much time on the computer. Absolutely, I do. Darkened rooms, blue lights, keyboards, machines surrounding you. Click, 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 click. The life of a conspiracy theorist. But every time you go outside, you're blown away. Go outside at night sometime. Look at the stars. Phenomenal. Maybe you'll see something that you can explain. Maybe you'll see something that you can't. Maybe you'll just see a beautiful sky. Maybe you'll get to hang out with your friend and have a deep conversation. Those are the best. And the next time you go out there on a super clear night and you're looking up at the dazzling stars and the bright white moon, know that I'm somewhere too, standing up in the back of my truck in the middle of nowhere, as far away from people as I can get, and I'm there right then. Looking at those same stars and that same impossible moon at the same time that you are. Thank you sincerely for investigating the Fermi paradox with me. Subscribe or follow Renegade Files now so together we can meet here again next time and explore the deepest covert stories where logic clashes with the official narrative. I am so glad to have you in the Renegade Files crew. I'm your host, Lex Gordon. Stay wild, Liberty Child.